Hello, everybody, and welcome for our INE Office Hours call for the month of October 2018. I'm excited to be here to answer your questions, to share your successes, to help you with supporting your clients, your patients, your family members, or yourself in what you need to move forward. And the goal of these calls is for us to learn from each other and from the situations how we can best support the people that we care for. And the whole, my purpose for being here is to learn and to grow with you. So without further ado, let's get started. So the way these calls work is if you have a question, you have two ways of giving it to, actually three ways of giving it to me. One is you can raise your hand, which is a *2 on your telephone keypad. Or if you're on the web call, there's a something over to one of the sides, depending on the browser you use, that says raise hand. If you're on the web only, then you can go ahead and type into the Q&A box, which should be in the upper right-hand side of your screen, or you can type into the chat. The Q&A is a one-way street, so only I see it. Nobody else can see it or respond, and but it goes nice and slow, so I can see them. So if there's a lot of activity, the chat stuff gets just goes so fast that I don't always get to see something. I miss it. So if you type something into the chat that you want me to address and I'm not addressing it and it's been a little bit, then go ahead and either retype it in the Q&A or if you're on the phone, raise your hand. So let's just, you know, really get into if you're having, you know, hey, I've been really successful. I have a new client. I've been working with some people and they're getting better and I'm just really loving it. Great. Share that. If you have questions about where to go next, what next steps to take, share that too, and ask, and I'll give you support. And let me know what program you're in. So if you're in IRSPT or CMDS or NEPT, I think I know everybody in NEPT, but some of the newer ones in the other programs I don't always know. So you can raise your hand, and let's go from there. And these calls are about sharing. Sometimes we end up with some really cool discussions about things we didn't intend to get into just because it gets brought up. So Lynn Rose says maybe it's the winter weather. Yeah, this winter weather is, I'm already done with winter. We've had, this is our second day, and it's been in the 40s and rainy all day. And this is usually January weather. So I'm like, okay, I'm done. It's enough. Let's move on. It's spring next, right? I need to move to a warmer climate. Hate this weather. I don't know how you guys way up north with the crazy weather for 3 months live through it. I would just be pulling my hair out. But that's just me. Anyway, questions, comments, raise your hand, *2. I see Tony just joined us. Yay, and Michelle G. And so plus, you know, Lynn and Lynn Rose and Eleanor who were on from the start. There were a couple other people on. I saw Heather a little while ago. Maybe she got on the chat. So go ahead and let me see, refresh. Yeah, there's not a lot of you on the chat. So, okay, maybe the winter weather is keeping everybody away. So who wants to talk about what? Raise your hand, *2. Let's have a conversation. What are some of the challenges you've been having with working with people? What are some of the successes you've been having? What are some questions you might have about specific labs to run or specific challenges even with people actually doing what you ask them to do? That tends to be a problem that a lot of folks have. You know, all of us have, no matter how many years you've been in practice, is that learning how to motivate people, and they do it when they're ready. They do it on their own timeline. So, Eleanor, I will open up your line. Hi.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hello? Okay, great. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
No.
I'm in the car, so I'm, you know, not, wasn't sure how well this would work. But I've been trying to get on for a while, and I figured I just would do it even in the car. I have a bunch of little questions that I'm going to run through. The first one, which is probably the easiest one to answer, is, I'm being asked for a recommendation for a juicer, and I know you always have the Omega at the conferences. Is that the brand you recommend?
I don't know that we have Omega at the conferences. I'm not, because that's not the way, when I use, I actually use the Green Star. I have a 20-year-old Green Star juicer that I use, and I know there's a lot of others that have come out since then. Lynn might be able to speak better to what some of the better ones are, but Omega is considered a good one. But I don't know what you mean by we have them at the conferences, because I don't remember having.
the ones that many times you give away at the end. For some reason, I thought they were makers.
Oh, it may be somebody that donated. I know we've given away an Omega, but it might be. There's a number of them out there, and I'm not as up to speed on the juicers as I could be. I like the 10 years because they tend to be slower, and they don't put as much friction and heat into the.
And I'm sorry, you broke up. What was the brand name?
Green Star.
Green Star, okay.
Yeah, it's
and
a 20.
Did somebody else, Lynn, did you have a recommendation,
I was,
Lynn? I thought I heard
that. Yeah, well, I have a Green Star as well. But I know at a couple of our conferences, especially Spring Into Vitality, that Artemis had used an Omega. It was a Hurum. It was a Hurum Burt,
right.
B-E-R-T.
Say it again?
H-U-R-O-M Vert, V-E-R-T. And some,
okay.
Yeah, some people like it. They say they're easier to clean. You know, so honestly, the best one you can use is the one you're going to use.
That's right.
I know. I have heard that. That's why a lot of people get the Jacqueline. But anyway, Okay, so that was one question.
Well, but honestly, there's, Breville is another good one to start out with. My very first one was a Breville, and I got it for $35 on Craigslist.
Mm.
And if that's what gets somebody to start out juicing, then that's what you do.
Yeah, I like that answer, Lynn, because I agree that there's a lot of us spend all this, what's the best green powder? It's the one they're going to take. And the ones that, now there's more of a choice, but back in the day, there was either the ones that tasted like grass and people would take a couple of spoonfuls and then they'd never get back to it, or they're the ones that tasted good, like I used to do greens first or something. And I was using the Premier Research and people come back and go, oh, you must need more of that. No, I'm doing okay. And then I said, well, you want to try this different one? These people would come back after, 3 weeks and go, I need more of that stuff. That stuff's so good. My whole family's using it. So it may not be the one that has the biggest nutrient punch, but it's going to be the one that you use. And the juicers, especially, because for me, the biggest thing to keeps me from doing it, it's so easy to juice with a Green Star. You just pop it in and it pops right out. It's the cleanup that it takes forever. So if you can find one that's easy to do, easy to clean up, that people will not feel like, oh, God, I got to juice again, that's the one that they're going to use. So Lynn's point is very well taken.
Well, the other nice thing, though, about some of the other ones is they have a lighter shoot. The one drawback, or one of the drawbacks with the Green Star is you have to cut things up because it has a smaller shoot. But something like the Jack LaLanne, the Breville, even the Churum, those have a wider shoot, so you can literally just throw the food in and cut. And so that is a benefit. So, just go over what they each have, and your client can decide for themselves.
Really good place is Discount Juicers. They have charts where you can compare them. You can compare the prices, the speed, all different things.
That's a great place, yeah.
It's a website called Discount Juicers?
Yeah. DiscountJuicers.com. DiscountJuicers.com.
Okay. I will direct them to that. Great. The second thing, I'm listening to this seminar, and it's got a lot of information that I'm trying to get really clear on. The things it's talking about is folic acid, and I know that there's synthetic folic acid. My question is all folic acid synthetic? Because some of the supplements actually don't even say folate, they say folic acid. And I'm just confused about why would they advertise it as folic acid if that's not what you want. I mean, could it be a good folic acid?
No. Here's the thing, right? It could be ignorance. So most supplement companies should know by now that there's a lot of hoopla about, don't take synthetic folic acid. and listed as folate. So if it's listed as folic acid, you need to call the company and not say, is it synthetic or not? You have to say, tell me the form of folic acid that's in here, right? And it, you know, is it a methyl folate? Is it a this folate? Is it a that folate? And try to get an answer. Majority that say folic acid are synthetic. So we just don't use them. There are more and more companies are moving away from it, but some of them, you know, it takes a lot to retool and to supply and all that. I was talking to somebody on email from a company, a relatively new company, and I mentioned about that. He goes, yeah, we're working on it. That was a company, Lynn, that we were looking at before, that Life Fuel or whatever. He says, yeah, we know, and we're working on it, and our, you know, it's starting in January, we're going to have folate, you know, methyl folate, but for now, it's folic acid. So if it says folic acid, it's probably folic acid. You need to, before recommending a supplement, call the lab and say, what is this exactly?
Yeah. Okay, I will do that. It just seems silly to me that they actually listed it that way, that they would try to hide it. I don't know. So that's why
they didn't list it. If they listed it as folic acid, but it's 5-methyl tetrahydrofolic acid, which is, you know, folate, what we call, but if they listed it that way, it really is methyl, then it's ignorance. They just don't know the difference. They don't know. They haven't been up in the research. They're not seeing that everybody's up in arms against synthetic folate, folic acid. But if it's listed that way, it's probably because it is, and they can't say it's folate. If it's folic acid.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question is, this thing I'm listening to is saying that glutamine and sugar feed cancer. So glutamine and sugar feed cancer. And the reason why that was kind of alarming to me is because several of my people that have leaky gut, I have them on glutamate, and it's saying that glutamate will convert to glutamine and feed cancer. Does this make any sense to you, what I'm saying?
It doesn't. It's controversial. There are some people who are very outspoken about this. They're not mentioning levels and amounts and sensitivity and all this. Glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter. It can get converted to glutamine. A lot of people have issues with converting glutamate to GABA, where that's the GAD, glutamic acid decarboxylate, that converts it, so they have a buildup of glutamate. I'm not sure how active that is from glutamate back to glutamine. I usually concern myself with giving people glutamine and having it convert to glutamate and causing an excitatory reaction, an anxiety reaction. I haven't been convinced by the research that glutamine is actually feeding cancer, but I can't say that I've done an exhausted research. It first came out in one of these cancer summits, and this, you know, one or two people were going through it, and others are saying no. So I think do the research, take a look at the science, because science can be tricky, and see if there's actually some truth to it. But when in doubt, leave it out. You know, if somebody has, if somebody doesn't have cancer, glutamine is not going to cause cancer. Somebody already has cancer. Can it trigger it? Probably if it does, it's in high amounts. But I don't know for sure. So I always go with when in doubt, leave it out.
So you don't see any problem with someone with a leaky gut having them supplement with glutamate then?
Glutamine.
Do you recommend that? I thought that was one of the supplements that helped heal the leaky gut.
It is.
Okay.
Definitely. I'm careful with people with glutamine supplementation if they have a lot of GAD SNPs, because I don't want and I've seen it. People take high levels of glutamine and, you know, become homicidal. So you got to be careful with it, like any supplement.
But this is the thing. It's a glutamate. Glutamate is what I'm recommending. They're actually doing a powder in the field.
Glutamate is not what you should be recommending for leaky gut. I wouldn't be recommending glutamate for leaky gut. I would be recommending glutamine.
Okay. That's where I think the whole confusion came up. So, but that is the one that does does impact, could impact cancer, that cancer, and if they have a GABA SNP. Okay.
That's, you know, that's okay. The thing. Like I said, I haven't done enough research to know. You know, so it's really a matter of pulling up the research for the cancer. Yeah, but it's definitely, I wouldn't be giving people glutamate because of the excitatory mode of it. I would, if you're going to give something for leaky gut, it's glutamine.
Okay. The final question is about SHINE. The day after SHINE, what is the purpose of that retreat that Monday? Is that a business-focused event?
Yeah, it's generally a business focus, and it's also like a communications focus. We're going to bring Laura Fine in the morning to help us, you know, take us through some activities to really improve our ability to listen and to break through and to work with our patients and clients. And then we also do what we call love seats, where everybody gets a time, you know, usually it's around 15 minutes. You've been at the live retreats we do in there. Like that, where it's like, what do you need help with? Now, it could be, doesn't have to be business focused. It's like, what's holding you back? We've had people who, what's holding you back, them back, is their own health, and we work on their own health. So it's whatever it is to help you to move forward in your business. I will say that we've been doing them for, I think we've done them 3 times so far. It has been phenomenal, and people just absolutely get so much out of it and really love them. So this year we're doing it at the hotel rather than at my house. In the past we've done them at my house, so we're going to do it at the hotel. So we do need to get a head count so we can tell the hotel how to set up the room and how many people are going to be there for lunch, because we're going to provide lunch.
And it's for any PT only?
Any PT only, yep.
Okay. And I did have one more question. I wrote my notes here. You know, I'm listening to this conference. This is 95% of people are iodine deficient, but, you know, my one thyroid person that I'm working with, I actually tested them, and they're not. Does that make sense, that, or do I need to test them again? Because, this doesn't make sense.
Well, we'll tell you, right? That's why I don't blindly supplement with iodine. Sure, 95%, but your person is probably in that 5%. Now, I also want to be really clear, when you are testing somebody for iodine, iodine load test is my gold standard anyway. And what I'm looking for is that they're over that 90% that's being eliminated. So when you look at the top part, it's a spot test, and then there's a 24-hour, and you want to look at that they're excreting over 95%. But also you want to look at the bromine and the chlorine. And if you haven't tested that, then you don't know for sure if they're iodine deficient, because they may be over 90%, but they have high levels of bromine and you still need to be supplementing. So if you're not clear, there's lots of info on how to interpret that test in some of our past NEPT calls, but also in the thyroid module.
Okay. I'll go back and look at that and pull the test again for the person.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it for me. That was it. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Eleanor.
Okay. Bye.
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah.
Can I open Lynn Rose? She was making some comments, and she agreed. She said it's okay. But she was making some comments in terms of the glutamate and that whole bit.
Yes, please. Yeah, because when I look it up, I remember now, because I just did a search, I remember finding there's some stuff that says glutamine is actually helpful for cancer, for prevention and reversal. So there's a lot of mixed reviews out there. So I'd love to hear what Lynn has to say. Go ahead, Lynn.
Okay. Well, glutamates, for as long as I can remember, have been bad. I mean, the Feingold diet was based on eliminating the glutamates, you know, all the colors and seasonings and flavorings and all that. But Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Excitotoxin, that would be an excellent resource, and it goes into a lot of detail about the glutamates. And I don't know the conversion about glutamines to glutamates. That's kind of outside of my chemical understanding, but they're totally different things, and you don't want to do any glutamates since you can help. I mean, that's all I really had to say.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also, I was just looking up the glutamine conversion. Glutamine, I can't remember which, but one is a one-way conversion. And I don't remember if it's this or it's, no, it's certainly not the GABA. Let me see,
The glutamates, you know, they they create problems like, you know, ADD, ADHD, and
It's an excitatory neurotransmitter, and that's why I said no, you should not be giving somebody with leaky gut glutamate. Glutamine is fine, but I don't think the conversion is very high in general, but it can be. You can go from glutamine to glutamate in certain folks that have some enzymatic problems, and I have seen that happen. So you do have to be careful about giving glutamine to people, but I would never give glutamate to – I don't ever give glutamate for anything. I mean, glutamate's not something you would supplement with.
I'm not a big fan of doing individual things anyway. I think they need to be in combinations that they naturally arrive in.
Exactly. Okay, so here's the thing. Glutamine, glutamate, GABA cycle. Let me see if I can find a picture. Picture always to me says 3,000 words because I love looking at the conversion issues. Let's see. So the study glutamate to glutamine cycling is here we go. Okay, so we go from glucose to pyruvate into the citric acid cycle, glutamine. GLN versus GLU. I'm trying to figure out their nomenclature. Let's see. Okay, glutamine. Okay, glutamine. GLU to GLN. Okay, glutamine. It can go both ways, but it's kind of like a cycle where they kind of go round and round. I don't see, this particular picture doesn't show me any cofactors or anything like that. But yeah, definitely thank you for that, because you should not be giving glutamate. And you might not be, Eleanor, you may just be thinking it wrong in terms of that. But glutamine certainly can be converted to glutamate. You have to be careful with that. As far as the cancer connection, like I said, I just looked it up real quick. And I saw, glutamine can be very helpful for people with certain kinds of cancers because it will help to heal the gut. And I think Lynn's point is really well taken. I like to use herbs and foods and avoidance of the crap that people are eating. I like to use things like arabinogalactans to feed the short chain fatty acid production. I like to use gut healing things, like the list of mucilaginous herbs and things like that. So there's a lot of other options for it. If somebody already has cancer and there's any research at all that says that a certain thing can cause that, then I would stay away from doing it as well.
This is Lynn.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw my half a cent in here. From what I've read and that you shared with us, that because of the inflammation that the people that we're working with probably have in their body, their behavior is unpredictable in this cycle, the glutamate-glutamine cycle. And so one of the things that I've been reading about is either L-theanine or taurine to help with that. And so, anyway.
That's help with the excitatory, right, to help balance the excitatory neurotransmitter.
Exactly.
So right, but not so much as, for the healing, that healing. But I'm a little, I'm more cautious with glutamine supplementation than I used to be for a couple of reasons. One is, as soon as people read or hear something like what's in the summit you're listening to, that there's a potential that a specific thing causes cancer, then that raises the question of, well, if I suggest it to somebody, and they do tend to be one of these anxious people who, worries about everything, then it puts something in their head and they may be mistrustful of me. So I tend to look at, like Lynn was saying, more of the whole foods approaches. Glutamine to glutamate. Go ahead.
Well, like you said about doing the whole foods, plants have other constituents besides the one they're extracting. And when you take them and isolate like that, you take away their buffers. And that's why you have side effects, the same as drugs. So if you take it from a whole plant, then you don't have the side effects that you do from extracts. So
exactly. Same thing with whole herbs versus herbal extracts, right? Herbal, you know, customized. It's isolated to a specific constituent. Like I look at, if I'm going to try to support somebody's liver, I'm looking at milk, distill seeds, as opposed to, and they have them powder them up and put them on stuff, as opposed to a milk, thistle, psilocybin extract, where we're extracting just particular constituents. And, you know, I've read a lot about the different constituents in their psilocybin, but there's psilocybin, which is actually found to be a little bit more, but nobody's really extracting for that constituent. Same thing with turmeric, right? If we extract it for curcumin, and we do an extract of turmeric for curcumin, we're missing out on a whole lot of the other beneficial components that we don't even know, right? We don't even know what they are. And wherever possible, I like to use whole food and whole food concentrates to get
there. There are ways you can do herbal extracts, but they're called multifractional, and that's where you extract them through water, through oils, through a lot of different things that extract different components. So you get a little bit closer to the real plant. So those, if you can find a multifractional, which most of them aren't, you can see those. But that's the only way I would really recommend doing just extracts.
Very good. Yeah. So there's a lot, same thing with, we supplement with people with vitamin B and C and all these other things. We do it almost for pharmacological effect, or for somebody who's been very deficient for very long, and replenishing that is going to take a long time. But I find myself more and more, for me personally, and I'm not saying this is right for everybody, but more and more for me personally, I have this opposition to taking supplements. You know, if I feel myself starting to get a scratchy throat, I'll load up on supplements and herbs and all this stuff. But on a regular basis, I don't find myself taking things. I more am going towards, adding medicinal mushrooms and various kinds of herbs and, whole food concentrates, plus, really just a lot of whole foods and green leafy vegetables and all. But we just have to tailor it to each individual person. In any case, going back to the glutamine question and the cancer, I am cautious, not because I think that there's a big connection based on what I've read, but because of the impact of the brain and people reading it and the influence of that on the situation. So if somebody wants to take it, or they question taking it, then I won't let them take it. Awesome. What else? Other questions? Thank you, Lynn. And let's see if anybody put anything in the Q&A. Nope. Anything in the chat? Lynn mentioned greens are more difficult to juice than a centrifugal juicer. I will say that the Green Star is the best for greens. You can literally put a piece of kale in with the green part down, and it just it sucks it through. It's pretty amazing. So that's why I had gotten the Green Star. All right. Anybody else? Marcy, that's why I got it too. Yeah. It's just so nice. I just wish it would self-clean. Okay. Anybody else? This is flow day. Anybody have questions, comments, anything I can support you with, anything I can help you with? Who's in Iowa City, Iowa? Is that near you, Lynn? Pitts, David Pitts?
That's Heather. Heather and I actually talked a lot. She lives in, she's in CMDS. So.
Oh, great. Hi, Heather.
Yeah.
You people up there in the cold, I feel for you. Oh, God. I'm done with winter after 2 days.
Well, right. I don't know if she had snow. I had snow. Valerie said that Ben Lynch says that magnesium, B6, and niacin help convert glutamate to GABA.
Super. So they're probably cofactors for GAD.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that brings me to a question that I've been working on with somebody who has excessive iron but low melatonin. And so we were talking about how melatonin is one of those cofactors because, again, with excessive iron, but her ferritin is lower. You know, those cofactors. And so I think that's really important for people when they, you know, again, it's that this for that thing, right? We cannot do a this for that. You have to look at all the
exactly.
pieces.
Exactly.
This is what I said to her. Because she said, well, I think I'll just take melatonin. It's like, okay, let's think about this. You need to be aware of the precursors of melatonin because if you're deficient in this, this will lead to low melatonin levels. So you have serotonin is a precursor to melatonin. And so if you have depressed levels of serotonin, then you're likely to have low melatonin. And so then you need to look at both of those pieces. And so what's the precursor of serotonin? So then you have your tryptophan, which also requires things like iron, magnesium, folate, and B12. And so it's like you teach us. It's always going, oh, this is low. Why? Look,
yes.
This is just why. And so I was working with her to not just start supplementing with melatonin because there can be other issues that come up.
Absolutely. And another one came up for me when you said that, right? Because everything in the body has kind of a negative feedback loop. So if the body detects that there's enough, it'll stop making it. So if you're taking 15 milligrams of melatonin, which is an extraordinarily big dose that a lot of folks do recommend, there's some research that does, and there may be times when you should or need it, but that's a lot of melatonin. What that's going to do is that's going to shut down that mechanism of converting serotonin to melatonin, right? So we're not going to make our own melatonin, so we become reliant or dependent on the supplement. But worse than that, what happens to the precursors? Well, we get a buildup, right? So we'll get a buildup of serotonin. We may get too much serotonin, and there are situations, excess serotonin syndrome, where that could be problematic. And it just occurred to me as you were saying that we always have to think backwards and forwards along the pathways when we start manipulating them. And if we are going to manipulate with hormones, and melatonin is a hormone, and because somebody's not making enough, great. We start with physiologic doses, tiny, tiny amounts that just, boom, you know, get it going without turning off our mechanisms. And I see too many people who have been on thyroid meds for, you know, 15 years, and their thyroid shut down because their TSH was down to like 0.1 or lower, and the pituitary is no longer stimulating the thyroid to produce, and then the thyroid just, okay, I don't have to do this. I'm not being asked to do it. Like any other muscle, right? You stop working your biceps, you get atrophy. You stop working your quads, you get atrophy. You stop working a pathway that converts from precursors into a hormone. You stop stimulating a gland to produce a hormone, and it shuts down. And if it's shut down for too long, we don't know what the likelihood of re-stimulating it is. So I'm really into what I like to call the minimum effective dose of anything that you give. What's the minimum effective dose? And sometimes we work it backwards, like if there's somebody's really in an acute situation and we think that we can give them a massive dose of something to pull them out, and then I go, okay, let's back it off. You're still having the good results? Good. You're still having the good results? Because that way people get results, and then we back it off. But this is in a short period, as opposed to with the very sensitive ones. We have so many of those in our ERC program who are very sensitive, and even tiny amounts of a supplement causes them to react. We start with a pinch. And Amy Yasko, I took some classes with her ages ago, and she would say a pinch is a valid dose. So you give somebody a pinch of something. No reaction? Good. Give them two pinches of something. You just keep working them up. You don't want to just give them a 500 milligram capsule of something, which can set them into a, you know, a reaction. And again, all of this goes into taking a good history. If somebody's, you know, taking all this stuff and they've never had a bad reaction to a supplement, you're going to be much more aggressive maybe about the dosing that you're going to do. But for those of who we see a lot of, like, I'm taking this and I took this a tiny amount of B vitamins and I got all agitated, and you're going to go really slowly, and we're going to find that minimum effective dose. And we're going to play with, now that we found the minimum effective dose, do we still need it? Or have we jump-started the body? What else can we do to jump-start the body and give the body what it needs to make this? Right, if the thyroid's missing, forget it. You're going to have to keep giving the dosing. But if you're supporting the system, you may be able to reduce it. Same way with insulin. Insulin's a great example, right? A type 1 diabetic who has some pancreatic destruction, and they're not really making adequate amounts of insulin, and they're taking insulin. We want them on the minimum effective dose of insulin, because high levels of insulin are damaging to the system, and high levels of insulin will cause insulin resistance. So now you've got a combination of type 1 and type 2 diabetes, because you've given them so much insulin that their receptors get zapped. And now you've got somebody who's just like, you can't get them off of it. So let's just always think of minimum effective dose. Always think of, how do I figure out why the body's not producing this? And how do I give the body what it needs to be able to produce this? And whether that be with, you know, with a hormone or a nutrient or a food or a concentrated food or an extract or an herb or whatever. We want to give people the safest form of anything possible. Make sense?
Yep. I actually have a set of measuring spoons that has a pinch, a dash, and a smidgen.
I have those too. They're fun. Right? And you think about it, too. You think about it, and I just had this another thought. You give me all these thoughts when my creative juice is flowing. So when we do a recipe, in our kitchen, we know that, yeah, if you overdo the cinnamon a little bit, it's great. You can put a tablespoon of cinnamon in most cases. It's fine. What if you overdo clove? What if you overdo nutmeg? What if you overdo cayenne, right? They're pinch doses. They're small doses to have a really profound sensory, you know, taste bud effect. We don't need a lot. And it's similar in the biochemical pathway. Sometimes you just need this little pinch to just move a pathway and just get that pathway jump started and moved on. And that's where we want to work with people and be real specific. Because a lot of folks go from conventional allopathic medicine and they move into more of a functional realm, but they take the allopathic thinking model of this for that. Let's put them in a box. They have this diagnosis, therefore, what herbs are good for this diagnosis? And that's not what it's about. It's, what can we do to rebalance the body using these amazing substances we get from nature? Okay. So it looks like, Louisa, you're having some trouble getting at modules you used to be. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm going to look into it. Heather would like to have her line open.
Okay. Heather?
Hi.
Hi.
I keep getting kicked out, so we'll see if this works.
Oh, no.
No, I'm pretty sure it's me. Anyway, could we go back briefly to the serotonin melatonin. Yeah. I'm particularly interested in addicts and addictions and kind of how it all works. And I recently, we found out that my sister is kind of in a mess, but it's interesting to me, because what you're just talking about, they have her on an SSRI.
Yep.
And it doesn't seem to be working. And her choice of coping is alcohol. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the alcohol, she takes a lot of melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just finding out that little piece. So, and then on top of it, you were mentioning a thyroid, she takes Armour.
Okay.
So how does that kind of all work together? Because, and granted, she's in the throes of it, and we're just kind of now trying to get her into some type of treatment and whatnot. But I think this information is good for her. She's a nursing student, or was. And
Yeah. So let me address a couple of things here, right? So when somebody's in an addiction state, right, whether their drug of choice is alcohol or cocaine or whatever, those particular substances have an effect on the body, not a physiologic effect on the body, a damaging effect on the body, and they interfere with the metabolism of, say, B vitamins, super, super big with alcohol, right? We have Wernicke's encephalopathy and some of those other diseases that occur in alcoholics, you know, end-stage alcoholics, because of the effect on vitamin B1 and vitamin B2. Those are the ones that are most affected, but all B vitamins are affected. And once you are taking substances that are creating this imbalance in B vitamins, for example, they're also affecting the liver and putting a lot of strain on the liver and the liver pathways and the methylation to try to detoxify and alcohol dehydrogenase and all these other enzymes. We're depleting the body by her habit, right? By her thing.
Yes.
And so what we want to look at is how do we help that? You certainly, we got to get her off of the alcohol. But while they're still on it and working with it, are there ways that you can support what the drug is hurting? And I say drug because it, you know, it is a drug. Same thing if I'm looking at somebody who's on birth control pills. That throws off the gut flora. But what else does it throw off? Well, it throws off vitamin C and it throws off B6 and zinc. And so we look at a particular substance. So I would say looking at alcohol and what are the pathways that are being evoked to detoxify the alcohol and what are the nutrients that are being depleted as a result. And effect, of course, it's having an effect on the liver, which stores our nutrients. So is it having an effect on nutrient stores? And rather than like, okay, so she's anxious, depressed, whatever she is that they decided to give her an SSRI or they're just trying to stop her drinking that way. We're looking at it like a very narrow focus. We're looking at, oh, well, if we think she doesn't make enough serotonin, let's give her an SSRI so we can just make her reuse over and over and over again the same serotonin. Right. It's like reusing toilet paper, please. Thank you. Know, it's like there's just so many times you reuse it and then you got to get rid of it. Right. And people end up with further depletion of serotonin when they've been on SSRIs for a long time. And that's indicated by the fact that most people need higher doses and higher doses and then they switch them and whatever. That's in the cases where it works. Right. In the cases where it doesn't work, like your sister, it's like that's not the pathway that's being hurt. That's not the pathway that's out of balance. And, you know, neurotransmitter imbalances can create addiction. Glutamine, for example, like we were talking about before, glutamine deficiency creates cravings for sugar, cravings for alcohol. So it's a much more complicated picture than what they're thinking. Oh, let's just give her an SSRI. Further, if the SSRI isn't working, we want to look at what other pathways. There's so many neurotransmitter pathways that could be involved. I would say that B vitamins are critical, and they're critical for thyroid function, especially B2. They're critical for brain function. They're critical for mood. So really looking at sometimes you can get good headway by giving somebody a B vitamin, like a nice, you know, well-balanced multi-B. The thing is, you know, we're talking food, and it's always better to go food first. We're talking addicts. Right? We can barely get them to eat anything, let alone getting them to sit down and drink a green smoothie and eat, you know, an amazing big green salad. You know what I mean? Like, that ain't in their repertoire. So we have to intervene from the most natural state possible and look for where are the pathways breaking down and how we can fill those pathways in. Is that making sense?
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I'm definitely not on board with how they're addressing her, but of course.
So B vitamins, but also what else, right? What else does alcohol do? it kills gut flora, right? So even just giving some natural band-aids at this point, because that's what she needs, is some band-aids to, and then work on the root problem, which is getting her off the alcohol, which is then work on the root problem, which what caused her to become alcoholic in the first place, right? So it's not just the alcohol. We had to go deeper and further back than that, right? So looking at gut flora, so can, is she open to try, you know, eating some foods or taking some supplements with, that will help her gut flora, right? And then going back to the melatonin, if she's taking a lot of melatonin and they're giving an SSRI, there are similar pathways, right, that they're mucking with. Yeah, and I wonder what that would be. You'd have to sit with the pathway, okay? So if she needs melatonin to sleep, meaning she probably was low on serotonin, but maybe the melatonin is causing a backup and she's got higher levels of serotonin, so adding an SSRI didn't do the trick. Maybe they need to be looking at other pathways. Is it the tyrosine pathway going to dopamine, right? Is it the GABA pathway that could be causing some, I don't know, you know, without going into a full history on her, what kind of symptoms they're trying to treat with the thing. The other thing is, and I know it works for addicts, I'm not sure it works for alcohol, but naltrexone is one of the things they give to help people with those kinds of cravings. And then there's
I just got her on that. And luckily her doctor, which is very conventional, said, I've been wanting to do this. Like, okay.
But is it low dose? Okay, yeah. Because when my son was in rehab, they wanted him on regular dose, and I said absolutely not.
Well, low dose is, so here's the thing then, though. The conventional use of naltrexone is not low dose, it's regular dose, and that's what's been studied for addiction. I don't know that there's been a lot of study on low dose naltrexone for addiction. It's more of an anti-inflammatory and it's used in autoimmune. So, right. But like anything else, you start low and you work up to the minimum effective dose, right? So usually when you're doing LDN, you're going like 1.5 milligrams to start and then you work them up to a 4.5. When you're using it in addiction, they could be using 45 or 50 milligrams, which is a huge difference. So it's a matter of finding what that right dose is to help with the addiction.
So just to clarify what you're saying about that, I'm just curious about the melatonin stuff. So with the melatonin, that could that's potentially raising the serotonin even more as a backup, right? Am I understanding
that
correctly?
Right, it could. And I'm not knowing that there's a lot of research on it. I'm just thinking in terms of pathway, right? If you have a high level of something that's a downstream metabolite, it's going to turn off the previous reaction because you don't need any more serotonin being converted to melatonin because you've already got way too much already. So it could shut off that conversion. And if the person already has sufficient or too much serotonin or they're on an uptake inhibitor, that could cause excess serotonin. Again, you know, shooting in the dark from a perspective of how you can help support her from like a band-aid approach would be, I would look at B vitamins and microbiome support big time.
Yep.
And liver support, obviously, you know, milk thistle seeds and things like that. So it prevents the breakdown in the liver of the liver.
Okay. Well, good. This is something to start with.
It's great.
It's a long, winding path.
It's such a winding path. And I feel for you, I have that in my family history. Unfortunately, the one relative I'm thinking about is on the straight and narrow now, finally. But it was a lot of ups and downs, and almost losing his kids. After losing his house and his car, almost losing his kids, and that slapped him into reality. So
she's about there, and unfortunately Lynn has heard this is the first one in the family, so it's just a bonus one apparently, but that's okay because we continue to learn and
we always learn.
Knowledge makes you stronger. Well, thank you.
No, absolutely, you're absolutely welcome. And what this points out to me too is I'm not a memorizer. I'm not a person who memorizes you know, facts and strings of this and that and the other thing. But I love biochemical pathways, in which I focus on in this program a lot, is what's the mechanism of this working? Because you don't have to memorize things. You just pull out your chart and you go, okay, this person has this thing. This substance is high. What other things can be going on? Oh, maybe it's a this deficiency or that deficiency or this excess or not. And how do you just keep going backwards in the biochemistry and the understanding of the physiology and biochemistry to make it work? When I was in school, I excelled at biochemistry and physiology. And I was okay at anatomy, because anatomy, I had to memorize this little nodule that sat on this particular part, and what are these different liver things called, and what are these called and that called. But I love digging into the movement, right? Let me look at the pathway. First thing you started to say is, I'm going to look at the pathway and think it through in ways that is maybe not conventional and maybe isn't even reported, like what Lynn was talking about with the melatonin connection with iron and ferritin. We were on a call once, somebody's saying, but and I'm like, it doesn't make sense. Why would your iron be high and your ferritin be low? Why isn't the body, what's wrong with the mechanism of taking the iron and moving it and storing it as ferritin? Because that's what's supposed to happen. And we looked and we found some obscure pathway where you needed melatonin to convert the iron into the, and again, here I am with I'm not great with memorizing a ferric or ferrous. It's one or the other that's in the blood, and one or the other that's the other way, and it has to be converted. And the melatonin was important for that. And we go, okay, let's, if that, and this person that we were talking to says, oh my God, I just had my whatever tested was a hormone test, and she goes, my melatonin was low. And she says, I've been starting to look at that, you know, and so it's interesting. It's, if nothing else, it helps us to be able to come up with novel solutions and really get to the root cause by understanding how things work.
Yeah.
Having that brings up something as, that brings up something as simple as, are you getting outside? Are you getting any of that morning sunshine?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, how do we stimulate our own melatonin production? Assuming you have the raw materials, assuming you have enough B6 and you have enough serotonin, and if you have enough serotonin, it means, well, what do you have to need? You need tryptophan. But then how do we stimulate our own? Well, getting out in the sun in the morning to stimulate the pineal to shut down the melatonin. And then, you know, in the evening, turning down the lights so that we have the darkness, because in our world, right, we're sitting at a computer until 11 o'clock at night with the lights bright on. The pineal doesn't get the message that it's nighttime. The pineal doesn't get the message to produce melatonin. So a lot of people are downing melatonin to make up for some faulty habits. And, you know, but in her situation, right, it's a situation when you have either, you know, an autistic kid, you have an alcoholic, a drug addict, they're not in their right minds to be able to make a good choice. So we have to get in there and push the issue and try to find those things that are going to make them feel just enough better that they're willing to make a choice. So my two cents anyway. Thank you, Heather. Who else? Anybody else? Tony, you have anything to say about that? You know, and addiction stuff, yeah, there's a lot of biochemistry related to it. But there's also spiritual and energetic trauma that gets locked in the body, and the pain is what drives people to cover it up with alcohol, whether it's cocaine, can do that other practitioners are really doing.
You're breaking up a little bit, just so you know.
I am? Yeah. No, I don't have a headset on this computer, so I'm just going to sit close to it. Any other questions, guys? Yeah, no computers within 2 hours of sleep. Yeah, that's one of my things. I don't do that one. But I don't have trouble sleeping. Right? If I had trouble sleeping, I would be more strict about that. Yeah. Tony said, I agree with not overlooking the foundations we just discussed. Yeah, so those of you in NEPT who are asking about modules, we have, those of you who came in early on, you just have access, you should have access to everything. But those of you who came in more within the last, I think we started this new software that we have on there a year and a half, 2 years ago, whatever, you're given access to module one, and when you finish module one, you do the test, and then you move to module two, and then you do the test, and then you do module three, and you just keep moving through, and it keeps opening them when you finish them up. If for any reason you need access, like you have somebody came in with adrenal issues and you're in mastery and you really want to get that module open, you have to reach out to Lynn and she'll manually open it for you. What we're trying to do is create this, like, you know, when you go to school, when I walked into my first day in school, I didn't get to choose, I want to start with biochemistry. No, I had to go through the courses to get there, like a regular school. So we're trying to create that so you can get through and you can build your foundations really well before you move on to more advanced, more advanced, more advanced. So those of you who have been in a while, you should have access to everything, but those of you not, you probably don't. If you used to have it and now you don't, then that's an issue we should be looking into. You're welcome, Heather. Yeah, you suddenly disappeared. So I'm glad that you were able to stay on long enough for us to have a conversation. It was great. All right. So anybody else before we have to go? What time is it? It's 2:18. I think we have 10 more minutes on the schedule. Looking. I think I'm back to back to back today. So, yeah, so we have about 10 more minutes. So anybody else have anything? Any questions, comments? Want to put your two cents in? And you're allowed to disagree with me, too, you know, by the way. I can be controversial sometimes, and I'm open to having a healthy discussion if you see it differently. And I'm also good at changing my mind if I see it, good evidence. So nothing? All right, going once. Is there another call before 5? Not for you. I have some private calls. There's a vital at 5. But no, I have a private coaching call with a gold person. You're not the only people on my calendar. Yeah, it's a busy day. And then tomorrow we have an NEPT open coaching. And we have a practice accelerator, if anybody's in practice accelerator, at noon. So it's a busy day. Yep. Okay. I'm going to get going then, guys. Anything else, Lynn, that you want to add? Good questions, good discussions. You know, simple questions that generate a lot of stuff. Yeah.
I appreciate all of the discussions today because they have shown the importance once again of it's never just this or that. Even with their food, it's never just take this food and because our food has all those constituents, and every time you put something in your body changes. So I really appreciate this particular discussion. And even with the idea of sunlight, we were talking about Heather's sister had skin cancer 2 years ago. They took a large chunk out of her leg, and now she's scared of sunlight. So we were talking, well, it really isn't sunlight that causes the cancer. And, you know, so once again, it's not a this or that. And like Tony said, it's going back to those foundations.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, really creating a relationship with people where they trust you so that when we do go back to those foundations, they're not going, yeah. Everybody tells me to drink water and eat more vegetables. You just see me the same. I'm not going to waste my money. No, where you're actually explaining to them in a way that really feels like, oh, I get it now. You know, when I explain about water and I explain path, they go, oh, now I know why you want me to do this. So, all right, guys, have a good one, and we'll talk again soon. I'm going to open up your lines so you can say goodbye to each other. 1, 2, 3. 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Talk soon.